From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, August 7th, 2018. And on this date, a LePage administration will comply with a court order to release more than $1 million in public campaign funds, but those funds will be delayed a little more. And we'll continue our series on eviction in Maine with a look at what happens to one family after an eviction. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
The LePage administration has decided to comply with a court order that will release more than $1 million in public campaign funds the governor attempted to block. But a last-minute bureaucratic maneuver by the administration threatens to delay payments to some qualifying candidates. Steve Missler has more.
The administration had until 5 p.m. Tuesday to either comply with Superior Court Judge William Stokes' order or to seek an appeal with the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. By Tuesday morning, the LePage administration made it clear that it would not challenge Stokes' order. Instead, the administration took a bureaucratic step that some described as retributive. It notified the Maine Ethics Commission, the agency that administers the Maine Clean Election Program, that it was free to access the blocked funds. But it also said that the State Finance Department would not help the commission process the payments, as it typically does. And that created a big problem, according to Bob Howe, an attorney for Maine Citizens for Clean Elections.
It appears that the LePage administration decided they would lose on appeal, but they seem to be dragging their feet in other ways.
Howe's group is the one that sued the LePage administration when the governor tried to single-handedly block funds to over 120 legislative candidates and one gubernatorial hopeful. The group prevailed after the judge declared that the governor can't block funds from flowing from the Maine Clean Elections program by simply refusing to sign routine financial orders. But the LePage administration's sudden decision to turn over all finance functions to an ethics commission with neither the authorization nor the staff to dispense the funds raised the prospects of more delays and potentially another legal challenge. According to Howe, attorneys from his group called the governor's lawyers to see if the administration planned to comply with the order. And shortly thereafter, the governor's office released a statement. The finance department was indeed helping the commission process the clean election payments. Once again, here's Howe.
After some initial foot-dragging, appears the LePage administration now be willing to comply with the order and help get the checks distributed soon.
At airtime, it was unclear if all the payments were sent to the qualifying candidates by the court order deadline. But in a statement, Paul Lavin, the deputy director of the Ethics Commission, said the administration's last-minute move to strip his agency of finance operations support could have a big impact on a 7-person agency that not only administers the Clean Election Program, but is also responsible for enforcing Maine election laws. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
As we've been hearing today, President Trump has unilaterally imposed sanctions on Iran, ostensibly to get the Iranians to the table to renegotiate the 2015 nuclear agreement. Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says the sanctions won't work, and the president was wrong to pull out of the agreement in the first place.
In my mind, there's no question that the president has made a huge mistake. It took a very long time to negotiate the agreement that we had. Other countries are still sticking to that agreement.
Republican Senator Susan Collins says she questions whether the sanctions will work. Trump has announced the unilateral sanctions on the use of U.S. dollars by the Iranian government and in other areas like the sales of passenger jets. They also affect the sale of food and carpets by Iran to the U.S. Around the country, evictions are on the rise, and in Maine, there were more than 4,000 evictions in 2016. This week, we're taking an in-depth look at the eviction process and its effect on tenants and landlords. In her second report, Susan Sharon has the story of a single mother and her four kids who are struggling after their eviction.
Most evictions occur because tenants get behind in their rent. And a recent report from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition finds that Maine's rental market is one of the least affordable in the country.
So I guess the sheriff tried three times to serve me at my house, but where I work full-time, they were unsuccessful. So after the third time, they just taped it to my door.
For Tina, we're not using her real name. The eviction process was triggered by a dispute with her landlord over a leaky ceiling and other maintenance issues. She withheld a portion of her rent, which is allowed by law, to try to get him to fix the problems. But the strategy backfired. Even though landlords are prohibited from retaliating against tenants, Tina's filed a case against her in eviction court and gave her 30 days to get out. Tina chose not to fight it.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, my gosh. Is your dad helping you?
Oh, no, it's just us today.
It's the middle of May, and Tina and her oldest daughter are at a storage unit in an old barn that they've rented for $30 a month. They've taken a day off from work and school to load up their van. With help from Pine Tree Legal Assistance, Tina was able to negotiate for additional time to move out of her house in Lisbon. But on Tina's tight budget, the family still hasn't found another place to live. So they're storing what few things they have until they figure out where to go, possibly to a homeless shelter.
You gotta do what you gotta do for the kids, you know? And if it means that you've gotta put all their stuff in storage by yourself, then that's what you gotta do.
They carry boxes up two flights of stairs and down a long ramshackle corridor. A large, thin piece of plywood bends slightly each time someone walks across the gaping hole it covers in the middle of the second story floor. Tina's daughter hesitates, afraid of falling through.
You get what you pay for. This was the cheapest one, so let's go. The stuff that we're putting here is like
unreplaceable.
Irreplaceable stuff, like the memories from the kids' childhood and everything like that.
Little kids' toys will be fine.
If it can't fit in the locker, then it's gonna be whatever the landlord decides to do with it, I guess.
Tina is leaving the kids' beds and other furniture behind. Without help, it's impossible for her to move it. Getting the stuff out of the house now becomes her landlord's problem. Matt Mastrogiacomo, a Lewiston attorney who represents property owners, says this is yet another out-of-pocket expense for landlords. And by the time a tenant is evicted, he says, rent hasn't been coming in for a while. It's money they typically don't get back.
So if the landlord is going to try to recoup those losses, they've got to then do a separate action, such as a small claims or civil lawsuit against the tenant. The reality of the situation is that the tenant's not able to afford their past due rent. The landlord's just going to never be able to recover that money because it's not cost effective to sue every single tenant.
That's one reason landlords and tenants often work out agreements outside of court to part ways on their own. These are known as informal evictions.
An informal eviction is where a landlord will go to a tenant and say, hey, it looks like you're behind, and if you're out by the first, you know, I won't file, but I need you out.
Adam Porton is a research specialist at Princeton University's Eviction Lab, which tracks evictions around the country.
And, you know, the tenant may decide to cut their losses and leave. And so that's not recorded by a court, but it's certainly still a kind of displacement. Certainly our numbers on the website are undercounts of the true scope of rental displacement and eviction.
And that displacement has consequences. Porton says it's often hardest on children.
Can you go put your shoes away? Those are yours. Put away.
It's now a little over a week since Tina was evicted from her house in Lisbon.
Yeah.
She and the kids moved in with her parents for several days. Then she found this new place to rent in the country. They've only begun to get settled in. Now she has a 45-minute commute each way just to get the kids to and from school. Then she has to drive to work. This means a much earlier start in the morning.
So instead of leaving at 6, we have to leave at 5:30. And then we don't get home until like 6:30, 7 o'clock at night when it's bedtime. So the kids have no time to wind down besides on the way here.
She's exhausted, she says. On top of that, she's come down with strep throat and missed additional work. But she likes this new place. It has only two bedrooms, but there are kitchen counters, new appliances, and windows that work. That wasn't the case in the other house. She's also paying $100 a month less in rent.
I have to pay for all of the utilities, but the landlord here gave me tips on calling Community Concepts before June to sign up for heating assistance in the winter. So they're already helping me, which is more than my last one.
Tina is spending more on gas for travel than she ever has before. But that will come to an end this fall when the kids start attending school in their new town. That's causing Tina's 16-year-old daughter some anxiety about leaving her teachers and her friends behind.
I guess it might be a little harder to get the teachers to understand my problems. I mean, I'm really socially awkward and I don't really talk to people in the first place. I don't know.
The eviction was stressful enough, she says. She didn't understand why they were being kicked out or how far away they would have to move. And now she's adjusting to the idea that in her new home, it may take a while before she feels like she fits in. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Tomorrow, our series continues with eviction court, and later in the week, we'll hear from landlords about their challenges with difficult tenants and trying to pay their own bills. State environmental officials say they've confirmed the presence of Eurasian water milfoil in the north end of Cobussy County Lake in Winthrop. The aggressive aquatic plant is found throughout the U.S., but right now is known to be only in one other water body in Maine, a 28-acre pond in Scarborough. Maine Department of Environmental Protection biologist John McFedrin says the milfoil was discovered in July by plant surveyors from a local group. He says the milfoil grows very densely at the expense of native plants.
And can impact our use of the ponds and lakes by animals and other organisms in the ponds and lakes, and potentially affect property values of our lakes and ponds.
McFedrin says it's most likely the milfoil was brought to Cobussy County Lake on a boat from another area. DEP officials say they are optimistic the early discovery and rapid response will reduce the risk of the milfoil spreading. And finally, today's extreme heat and humidity has led to some postponements and closures. Due to the high temperatures and potential for storms, the Bangor Police Department has postponed its National Night Out event, which had been scheduled for early tonight. Officials say the gathering, which promotes police community partnerships and neighborhood camaraderie, will likely be rescheduled for sometime in September. And this afternoon, Shannon's Unshelled, a seafood restaurant in the heart of Boothbay Harbor, closed early. On its Facebook page, the restaurant, which has several outdoor picnic tables, says it wanted to ensure that its employees and customers are safe in the heat. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, August 7th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.